space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Ah, the opening that all of us 90s kids, well, 90s teenagers are very familiar with.
You do know that started in 87, right?
Yes, I know.
So it's an 80s show, actually.
Yeah, but it's the 90s teenagers.
And actually, do you know where that opening comes from?
Where does the opening come from?
Star Trek The Motion Picture in 79. It's the same opening.
I believe it.
I mean, it's literally the exact same opening. I mean, it's re-recorded, but it's the exact same thing, so... The opening actually goes back to 79. So, ha. Huh. Not a 90s
ruin,
thing.
Why do you ruin everything with me?
Because,
everything.
Pardon my facts getting in the way.
Your facts do get in the way because your facts aren't the whole story.
Are you one of these people like it's a widely believed fact? Are you one of those people?
No.
Well, also, we want to mention adamandeve.com. You can get the Star Trek Next Generation parody, the Star Trek...
This ain't Star Trek, yeah, The Next Generation, or whatever it is.
Yeah, I hate those stupid-ass titles, but you can get that at adamandeve.com. And if you go to adamandeve.com and use the promo code STATIC, then you'll get 50% off a single item.
Yep.
You'll get free shipping, 3 free DVDs on top of that, and you'll get a free mystery gift. And this is for anything. If you want like a butthole toy or a Vietnamese swing fuck chair or anal beads or a plastic pocket vagina
Whatever. For instance, I just found the Whisper Wireless Metallic Bullet and Sleeve. It's one of those little magic bullet vibrator thingies for women. Comes with a little sleeve. And this one's wireless. So, you know, you throw the batteries in, you throw the control in your pocket and the bullet in your pants and you're good. And it's normally $60. Use that code, 30.
Yeah, so use the promo code STATIC. Go to adamandeve.com. It's basically, you can't lose. I mean, you're getting something to pleasure yourself. You're saving money. You're getting 3 free DVDs. You don't even have to pay for shipping. Plus, you get the special gift. Just use our promo code STATIC. You don't lose in this deal, you know?
That's right.
And you can get the Star Trek XXX parody from Classic Trek or Next Generation.
And you help us out, too. And that's an important thing. I mean,
well, I don't want to seem like a total whore.
I know, but a lot of people have... I've actually had fans say, you know, well, gee, can I donate to your show or anything like that? And
Nobody's donated to the show. Nobody has donations.
Nobody has donated to the show, but I've actually had one fan ask me via Twitter.
Then tell them yes, they can donate to the show.
I told them no, go to Adam and Eve and buy something. And he said, okay.
So, adamandeve.com. Now, as you can tell from our opening, since this is the second week of Star Trek month, obviously we're on to Next Generation. Now, I don't have as fond of memories as you seem to, Scott.
I do. I have a lot of fond memories of this show. I mean, this is one of the things that I remember, because when I got into it, it was the early 90s. I know it started in 87. I missed that whole 87 to 90 run. But when I started getting into it...
I'm assuming you've since caught those episodes.
Yes, I have. But when I started watching it, I was in college, so it was 93, 94. And it was one of the few American shows that played on the regular non-satellite BBC. So while I was over in school in England and I was going through culture shock and everything like that, I actually was able to catch Star Trek The Next Generation, and it was just a little bit of home.
See, to me, the reason I don't have such fond memories, I watched it all the time, but I honestly do not think this is that good of a show.
And then there's Will Wheaton. Not Wesley Crusher. Wesley Crusher was a shit character, but Will Wheaton is a good actor, and he's a lot of fun.
I disagree with that, but... Next Generation was never that good. To me, Next Generation was always... It played everything so safe. You always knew that if character A gets in trouble in the first reel, that they're going to be okay by the last reel, leaving Tasha Yar out of it because there's a specific reason she was killed, and it was not for a story reason.
It's because she left the show.
Because she asked for more money.
Right.
And so they said, screw it, kill her. So I'm talking, they story-wise, everything was played safe. They always, there was never any actual sense of danger for any of these characters.
There wasn't in the original series either.
Right. And we talked about that last week. That was a problem. Roddenberry, especially when he was in control for about the first 2.5 seasons. He wanted everything to be the same. He wanted, you to tune in. If you tune into episode 3 and tune up into episode 33, that it's the exact same character, the same characterization, the same way the characters played. So you always have a familiar jumping on point.
But at least in The Next Generation, and I'll give you this, the characters didn't grow. But at least in Next Generation, they were a little bit deeper.
A little bit, yes.
A little bit deeper. There was
sometimes to the point of stupidity. I'm looking at you, Will Riker. You've been promoted. No, I want the Enterprise. You've been promoted again. No, I want the Enterprise. You've been promoted again. No, I want the Enterprise.
Well, no,
but he's always talking about career advancement and how good this is going to be for his career. And every time they try and advance him, he says, no, I'm holding out for the Enterprise. And then when he's actually given the Enterprise, when Picard is out of the picture, he doesn't want it. I can't take Picard's ship from him. It was just, his writing was so inconsistent. They didn't know what to do with the Riker character.
I'll give you that.
Do they make him ambitious or do they make him second in command?
That was bad writing on that single character. Another perfect example, Wesley Crusher. Bad writing on a single character. The embodiment of a Mary Sue and wonderful plot MacGuffin.
Yet, he was still not the most worthless regular character.
Who was the most worthless regular character?
Troy.
Why?
Did she ever do anything? What's it thinking? I don't know. What's it feeling? I don't know. I'm feeling hate. I mean, all she did is ever run around and go, I'm feeling hate. I'm feeling anger.
She didn't
do anything.
What she did was she gave human emotions to alien characters that, because of makeup, couldn't express those emotions. When they were negotiating with the Ferengi for the very first time, he's lying, Captain. I can sense it. He's bluffing.
He's
here.
He's Ferengi. Blah, blah, blah. Of course he's lying. That's what they do.
Well, we didn't know at the time. He was just kind of an ugly, scary dude on a big-ass screen. And the other reason that she was there, to pull in the geek boys, because back in the day she looked good.
She looked damn good. Of course, she had big poofy 80s hair.
Marina Sirtis, I have nothing but respect for you, and you're a wonderful woman. Nowadays, she's not looking quite as good as she did.
But see, okay, you can see exactly when Roddenberry lost control of Next Year, and he didn't lose control for any reason other than he was dying at the time.
Right, right, right.
But right around the middle of season 2 is when you can see the tone of the show change. That's when Berman and Braga took over.
That's when you get a little bit more character growth. That's when some of the long-term story arcs start playing through.
But see, because Roddenberry hated those.
Yes, I know.
If you remember, now, when you rewatched, or when you caught for the first time the first 3 seasons, did you see them in order or not?
No, I did not.
Okay, then you...
And it made no difference whatsoever.
Yes, it would have at the end of season 1. This is what I'm trying to get to is, then you might have missed this. I'm not trying to be insulting that, you missed it, but if you see these out of order, you do miss the little continuity nods they had in season 1, which Roddenberry hated. The last 5 episodes of season 1 all take place in a specific order. They all have a running plot theme, and they all have a background running theme building up to the conspiracy episode.
Well, I've since seen them in order, so.
Well, do you remember the conspiracy episode with the bugs that were taking over Starfleet captains and admirals' minds?
Yes.
By the way, the only episode of any Star Trek that's ever had a parental advisory warning in its original airing.
Really?
That episode had a parental advisory for violence warning.
That I didn't know.
Because remember when they melt the guy's, his head explodes and they melt his chest and the bugs pop out?
Yes.
That had a parental advisory warning in its original airing. But the buildup to that of something's wrong in Starfleet, the weird troop movements and all that was for the previous 4 episodes as well. That was a background thing. You'd hear Riker, have a couple of line mention and whatnot. And Roddenberry hated that. He fought against that plot line. He hated the fact that these take place in a specific order.
And again, Roddenberry came from a time in the 60s when what TV wanted was a beginning, a middle, and a complete resolution so that they could air them out of order or when they so chose. And yeah, that's why he hated that writing style. It's because of what he came from. And luckily, I think by the time the late 80s, early 90s walked around, we started to see that TV in itself was maturing. We started to see things that could hold a longer story arc that weren't, you know, an ABC special miniseries event.
Right. Well, and also this is something I have issues with that I defend Next Generation, because I've been kind of bashing them, and I'm going to do a little bit more later. But I defend them on this. Everybody hates season one, and I don't understand why. Season one to me is the only season, and this is both a positive and a negative, okay, that actually felt just like classic Star Trek with new characters.
And that's why people hate season one, I think.
And I love that because it really did. You gotta remember, I watched these in 1987. To me, this was the new Star Trek. We didn't call it Next Generation. We called it the new Star Trek back
then.
Right,
right, right.
And that's what it was. It felt just like I was watching classic Star Trek again, but it had new characters and better effects. And I love that feeling.
And see, and I acknowledge that feeling, and it has its place. But I think by the time 87 rolled around and we started seeing this stuff, I think television audiences had also matured and they were looking for more. They were looking for more than what the classic Trek gave them. I think the audiences were looking for a little bit longer story arc that Roddenberry hated. I think they were looking for a little bit deeper characters, you know, which Next Gen, at least you did. You know, with Kirk, it was a paper cutout of a character.
Right.
I mean, it really was paper thin. Go fight some shit, fuck the alien, and come back to the ship and all is good. And with Picard...
And if your name's not in the opening credits, you're dead.
Exactly. And with Picard, we started seeing, you know, emotion played a part in his negotiations. We started seeing negotiations, which... You Kirk didn't do. Let's be honest. He went, will you acquiesce to my demands? No. Well, we're going to fuck you up then.
No, that's more Sisko. Kirk would still follow the prime directive in that until he decided to break it. Sisko is the one that said, oh yeah, fuck you. You're not playing with me. Well, fuck you. Fire. That was a Sisko thing.
That, you're right. And that came back with Sisko, but I mean, you know, with Picard, we started seeing negotiations. We started seeing a little bit more of the human side. We saw crew members on the Enterprise start to have fun and act a little bit more human. We know that Riker played trombone. We know that Picard loved his Shakespeare. We know that, oh gosh, you know, we had Data and other crew members playing poker, for God's sake. We started to see that little bit more of a human side to them than the original Trek gave. And I think the reason people hate that first season is because they had matured and wanted to see this stuff. And when the new Star Trek rolled around, it didn't deliver for however many episodes were in the first.
26, I think.
Yeah, 26 episodes. It didn't deliver until the second season when...
See, and I liked when it got dark. Like in Q-Who, the first appearance of the Borg. Although there's lots of continuity issues with that.
Yes.
But like that was a dark-ass episode.
Yes, it was.
And see, I personally don't think Best of Both Worlds was this amazing masterpiece of storytelling that every other person on the planet seems to. Was it a good story? Yeah.
I think it was a very good story. No. I think it was a very good story. I don't think it was an incredible story.
I think, but... and I'm not going to go too deep into this week, but I think... even the weakest Deep Space Nine stories dwarf the best Next Generation stories. My opinion. Deep Space Nine is not only the best Star Trek, but it is one of the best science fiction shows of all time. And I think Next Generation can't even come close to what Deep Space Nine
address,
did.
We'll address that later, because I don't agree, but I don't disagree.
Well, Deep Space Nine was also a very different show.
Right.
And, well, I mean, they were connected. We have to bring up Deep Space Nine when talking about Next Gen, because you got to remember the last two seasons ran concurrently.
Right.
And they did have crossovers. Picard was in the first episode of
yes.
Deep Space Nine. You know, Clone Meanie, he took his character from Next Generation.
From Next Gen, brought it to DS9, yeah. Right.
And, oh, you know, O'Brien, actually regular character on Next Gen, became a regular character on DS9. Worf went over to DS9.
Right.
And they were they regularly referred to old episodes of Next Gen. And then you've got, do you remember the episode of Next Gen where Dr. Bashir appeared when they were docked at DS9?
Not off the top of my head.
You got to remember, in DS9's first season, it was basically like a Wild West show. Nothing worked on the station. You know, they had the work, you know, they didn't have technology that worked and things like that. So when the Enterprise was docked there, Dr. Bashir broke into the medical bay to use their medical equipment.
Oh, perfect.
And then he had a little side adventure with Data and Geordi.
Oh, okay.
So there was a crossover where Dr. Bashir was on was on the Enterprise, and they've got Worf and Geordi in that walking on the DS9 sets. So you got to remember how kind of cool that was to have the two shows running concurrently.
Yes.
In Next Gen's last two seasons, DS9's first two seasons. That was interesting. But one thing that I've always had a problem with, and I had a problem with this in Classic Trek, I have a problem with it in not as much in Voyager as much as it's going to be weird for me to defend Voyager a little bit, but Next Generation did this so much that they are so guilty of this writing trap.
Okay.
The Enterprise is the only ship in the entire Federation that ever seems to have anything interesting happen to them. Every omnipotent being that the Federation encounters, Enterprise did it first.
Yeah.
Every time warp, Enterprise did it first. Yeah. Every new alien race, Enterprise. Okay, are they the only Enterprise ship that, or the only Federation ship that ever has anything interesting happen? You never hear about any other Federation vessel that has anything interesting happen.
Yeah, and
that bothered me because that's a writing trap.
That is, and I'll agree with you there. And that goes back to what I talked about last week when I said, you know, gosh, I'd like to learn what the rest of the Federation is doing at this point.
Still didn't in Next Generation's time.
Yeah, I know. And can you imagine, let's say you're at Federation headquarters on Earth.
San Francisco.
In San Francisco.
By the way, that doesn't exist in DS9's timeline. The Jem'Hadar blow up Federation headquarters.
Okay. But nonetheless, so it's Next Generation timeline. You're at Federation. All of the interesting shit that happens to the Enterprise. Let's say that Enterprise isn't the only ship that has interesting shit happen to it. Can you imagine the amount of ships' reports of interesting shit just came back to... Your average sci-fi writer would just join the Federation to try and work at headquarters and just be like, I'll file reports.
It's just going to be cool to read all this shit.
I just want to read all this shit because, you know, you've got all this.
I take back my statement a little bit. It wasn't just the Enterprise. It was just their crew members. Because whenever they would talk about their past adventures, it was always Riker. Was the, you know, whenever he'd go when I was on an old ship, then it had something interesting happen.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it was boring. You know, when Troy was on another ship, it was just, to me, that's a writing trap.
Yeah.
You know, I can't stand when writers fall into that trap. They're our main characters. This is our main vessel. So that's got to have all the interesting shit happen.
That is the one thing that was missing. We never had, and even Kirk had this in some instances, but we never had Picard's mentor. You know, you never hear about Picard going, did you hear what blah did the other day on his ship, the Cornelius,
the Valiant,
Valiant or Cornelius, and they faced this and they did that, and that's why I thought it was an honor to serve under him when I did. And
another thing that Next Generation pissed me off as, now not only because I was a Classic Trek fan, but because I'd read, and I know this is going to sound weird, but the role-playing game. I was really into the role-playing game.
That sounds really weird.
That was the role-playing game for Star Trek before Next Generation came on board.
Right.
Was the definitive expanded universe. That's where everybody went because that's what seemed all the best writers went.
Okay.
And I loved the Klingons. And the Klingons in Next Generation were not the Klingons that were in the classic Trek
timeline. Didn't they even address that on that one where they used all the digital effects to go back to the Trouble with Tripples episode? Well,
first of all, that was a DS9 episode.
Oh, okay.
But no, all they addressed on that was the reason they looked different.
Okay.
But you got to remember, the Klingons in classic Trek and in the role-playing games, they were very much a Cold War analogy. They were a paranoid race, always in an arms race with the Federation. They, like I said, paranoid is the best way to put it. They always, everything that happened was they thought you were trying to screw them over.
Ah, okay.
They were not this honor-like warrior samurai race that Next Generation portrayed. And even Next Generation went into the Klingons' past, and all that stuff from classic Trek, all that paranoid crap, that was gone. They'd always been this honorable warrior race, and it's like, but that doesn't jive with the Klingons we saw on classic Trek. Yeah. They were not an honorable warrior race. So to me, it kind of pussified the Klingons. And I didn't like how Next Generation pussified them. And I hate to keep bringing up Deep Space Nine, but they brought the Klingons back to being badasses on DS9.
Okay.
You know, so DS9 redeemed them.
Okay.
And I also thought Next Generation mishandled all but one of the classic Trek characters appearing on the show.
Okay.
The only one they got right was Dr. McCoy.
Again, everybody's favorite character.
Yeah, because he was still absolutely Dr. McCoy in the pilot.
So what was wrong with James Doohan when he showed up?
Well, first, now, I don't know if I can legitimately bitch about this as a continuity error from Next Generation or a continuity error from Generations, the movie. But when Scotty gets rescued from the Dyson Sphere, he's been in there for like 80 years or something.
Right.
And he hears the Enterprise of the ship rescuing him. He goes, ah, I bet Jim Kirk dusted the old girl off himself. Except by the time he entered that Dyson Sphere, continuity-wise, not only did he know that the Enterprise had been destroyed, but he also knew that Jim Kirk was dead.
Right.
So why would he assume Jim Kirk dusted the old Enterprise off to rescue him?
I don't know.
That's a continuity problem that the writers of Generations should have went, wait, when Scotty was on the show, he would have contradicted what we're having Scotty do in this movie. So that just bothered me right there. But then it seemed like all of James Doohan's appearance was basically to make fun of some of what had become the cliches of Scotty, like overestimating times and, you know, things like that. It just seemed like they only brought him on to be a parody of what Scotty had become in pop culture.
And that's precisely why they brought him on.
Which to me, that was an insult to the Scotty character from classic Trek.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
And then, I mean, honestly, Spock was totally wasted. His two episodes were utterly pointless. They could have had any Vulcan character in there. There was nothing in what he did that was the Spock character. It was just Leonard Nimoy playing a character named Spock doing these actions.
Okay.
Again, I thought they didn't get the character. You know, it was clear, and it turns out I was right, that those were standalone scripts. And then when they got Leonard Nimoy, they just changed it to be Spock because it was not meant to be Spock. So again, those were not really a Spock episodes.
Right.
Which... it just seems like they never were comfortable having the classic Trek characters on Next Gen, even though the fans constantly were asking for it.
Yeah, and I don't think they were comfortable, and I think that was... I'll agree. I don't think they were comfortable, and I think that they were forced into doing this stuff or really pushed their way into doing this stuff. But really, overall... I mean, the series overall isn't that bad if you take it as standalone. If you take all of your Star Trek expectations on all the stuff that came with that name that was wrangled around the original series, and you just toss that aside and go, here is Space Crew in Peril, a brand new science fiction show, then it was excellent. And I think... over time, it did live up to the Star Trek name after a little while. So yeah, maybe in that first season and in it didn't live up to the expectation that a lot of people. Yeah, it didn't live up to the expectation that a lot of people had for the show. But it taken on its own, it was pretty darn good.
See, I don't look at it with this, like, oh my God, I loved that series. I look at it as that series basically was the placeholder for me until Deep Space Nine came along.
See, and I look at it and I go, that was a pretty darn good series. I'm like, of course, like I said last week, I wasn't a huge Trek fan to begin with.
See, I was. I grew up watching these. I grew up watching them in syndication. I had the VHS tapes. I saw all of the movies in the theater, even five. And, you know, well, I saw most of five in the theater, as we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
I missed the last 10 minutes.
You walked out on that one.
And keep in mind, I'm a Trekkie, and I walked out on that one. What does that say about that movie?
You're not the only person I know that... You're not the only huge Trekkie I know that walked out on that movie, so...
On that one, fuck you, Shatner. Write, direct, star, produce. Screw you, egomaniac.
Yeah, same thing worked for Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah. Actually, Shatner's still a better actor. But
not by much.
But I don't know. I'll fight you on that. Denny Crane. Denny Crane was fucking brilliant, man. When he was Denny Crane, it will throw everything from T.J. Hooker and Captain Kirk out the window for Denny Crane.
I'll give you that.
But to me, Next Generation, it was sloppy writing 101. The scripts were so slapdash. And not even the writer's trap that we'd already talked about, but they had another writer's trap that they always fell into because of not the no continuity, but the loose continuity and the relative standaloneness of each one. They would always introduce something at the beginning of the episode that would save them. Like all of a sudden, you would find out the Enterprise has this experimental piece of equipment that's used for categorizing, not spacious gases. And then, lo and behold, the enemy they run into can only be, stopped by the spacious gas, and they happen to have the equipment on that one week.
Yeah.
That was just that sloppy. Now, if they'd introduced that four episodes before and then use it four episodes later, that would be good, because then you wouldn't be falling into that trap of, well, they introduced that, and then your brain is telling yourself, well, clearly that's going to come into play later in this episode.
No, I'll give you that. There was some sloppy, but again, this was, I mean, TNG was almost, it was almost a nod to the old serials.
Eh.
Almost.
I with you on that.
But I still enjoyed it. And yeah, they fell into traps. And the worst trap in the world is the Wunderkind
trap. Wesley Crusher.
Well, why didn't you guys not see this obvious, amazingly complex equation right here? Or, it was here is this little kid who is with no training whatsoever, no Starfleet training, walking up to the captain of the Enterprise and going, well, here's your problem, blah. And
well,
you just want to slap him.
Well, and I also had a problem with, now, I understand the limitations of, keep in mind, it was relatively big budget, but still the limitations that they had were like, all of a sudden you'd see like Picard showing Riker something that happened, and it's got all the edits, and literally they would just reuse the footage that they had, and you go,
yes,
where was the camera? How is he showing him this? How was it recorded? Where, they would also be like, aft view. Where is this camera? Is there like a little floating camera around the ship that, they can turn on at any time? Where is this fucking camera for the goddamn view window?
I don't know. I think one of my friends, when we were doing role playing and we were having fun, because at one point, to give you an idea of how much of a role playing geek I am, we had our D&D characters end up in the Star Trek universe.
I had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles piloting VTs from Robotech. So there.
Wow. But anyway, one of the deals was that he came up with was there were constant holodeck recorders all over everywhere. Like literally built into the side of the ship and stuff like that, or just holodeck recorders that record everything at all times on the Enterprise. And one of our characters was like, my God, 1984 was right. Big Brother is constantly watching.
Yeah, because I mean, yes, I understand they have the technical limitations, but of the writing, but that's just sloppy.
Yeah, that I'll give
I
you
mean,
that.
If nothing else, you go to the raw footage you shot for that, because it looks bad when it's edited and goes to different angles and goes to tight shots and, yeah, and wide shots. And you go, wait a minute, this was some event. We were in the middle of a battle. How did we have this?
Yeah, I know.
None of that shit makes any sense.
I know, I hear you. But it was still a good, it was just a fun little romp of a show, though.
And see, that is, this is something where I disagree with people. That when people complain about Deep Space Nine, and see, I can't get away from the comparisons because you got to remember with these two shows running concurrently.
Everybody was comparing, and yes. Right.
Deep Space Nine was, to me, the serious adult show. Next Generation was your impetuous teenage years. Because everyone always said one of their complaints about Deep Space Nine was it's not fun. It's not that fun, light adventure. And I go, exactly. That's why it's good. I don't like a fun, light adventure kind of pirate movie kind of sci-fi. That's not the kind of science fiction I go for. And I go for that hard, dark stuff that you've outright told me you don't really get into as
well. Yeah, I'm not really into the hard science fiction. I'm not really into the super dark science fiction. I like the light romp of an adventure. And yeah, that's one of the things why I didn't like DS9 was... It seemed that it had lost.
Oh, and trust me, by the end of DS9, it was a dour. I mean, that show was so dark. You actually kind of felt a little dirty afterwards. It was so good.
Can I finish a thought?
Sorry,
it's okay.
Fucker.
I was just saying that it seems like by the time DS9 came around, Star Trek the universe,
the franchise
had lost all optimism for the future altogether.
Because I think they were reflecting what the 90s. We're reflecting that, you know, we were involved in, you know, Desert Storm and, you know, Muslim extremism, you know, even though that wouldn't hit head till 2001, was starting to ramp up. And, you know, America was, let's put it this way, a race war was building. I mean, the later Next Gens and the early DS9 seasons were reflecting America at the time. It was becoming a darker America.
And part of me says that when we're in that darker... When we're in those darker times as a country, it is all that much more important to have something light and optimistic to look at and to look forward to.
And see, I disagree. That's just an area where you and I disagree.
Right.
One thing about Next Generation, do you know why the first five or six episodes were so badly written?
Why?
Writer's strike. The 1988 writer's strike hit.
Oh, really?
If you go back and... You watch those right after the pilot. You go watch like the next five episodes. Go back and watch all the classic Trek. You'll notice those five are basically remakes of classic Trek episodes.
Ah.
Because those were quick to write. We take the classic Trek script. We change some of the names and situations. Script's done. We can hammer out five of these in the time it would take to write a whole new script.
There you go.
That's why, I mean, like literally the first regular episode after the pilot was literally a remake of The Naked Time. Of classic Trek's The Naked Time. Okay. Next Gen's The Naked Now. It was literally a remake. I mean, at least they did link it. They mentioned when the Enterprise, non-numbered, ran into that virus. So it was technically a sequel, but it was really just a remake because they hit all the same notes.
Okay.
So that's why the writer's strike of 88 hurt the first season right off the bat, which is another reason that one might be considered weak.
Yeah, that's true.
The writer's strike... really did hurt. That's the same thing with War of the Worlds, the series. The writer's strike hit them the same time, so they kind of had to half-ass all the early scripts. And that was another Paramount show. That's why I'm bringing that up.
Oh, that's fine.
But just to me, Next Generation, not that good yet. I think, and we'll talk about Generations a little bit in a minute. I think First Contact is an amazing Next Generation movie. I think First Contact is a great, great movie. Nothing?
No. Well, I think it wasn't a bad movie.
I loved the H.R. Giger redesigned Borg. I think they made the Borg dangerous again after they basically had neutered them with the whole data lore bullshit and the Borg all getting personalities and crap.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
After Hugh infected the Borg were pussified like you wouldn't believe.
Yes.
Although the Hugh episode was really good when a Borg regaining a personality.
That was interesting.
That was a nice aspect. But let's talk Generations. We only mentioned it a little bit last week because you said you consider it more of a Next Generation movie than a classic Trek movie.
Yes, I do.
See, I think it's a 50-50 to me. But What did you think of Generations as a movie?
Meh.
Yeah.
It had its,
it was meh.
It was it really wasn't great. It wasn't that good. It wasn't bad. It was just meh. And it had some, I'm trying to remember exact deals, but it had some very unlikely things. It had some characters that were acting in ways that I can't imagine them acting.
Right.
It was just meh.
And to me, Kirk's death is one of the most pathetic hero deaths ever. And that was the reshoot. That was Shatner's preferred version. Have you ever seen Kirk's original death?
No.
In the work print, okay, you can remember in the final movie, he basically is walking across that big metal bridge and Soren shoots the bridge and it falls and he slams into a big rock and he dies.
Okay. Oh, yes. Okay. That's right.
Well, in the original, he was walking across that bridge and Soren shot him in the back with that gun and he died. And Kirk or Shatner said that wasn't a heroic enough death for Kirk.
See, and I think I would have preferred seeing
I would have preferred him shot than slamming into a rock. That's not a heroic death.
No.
That's terrible.
No.
You know, and then, of course, they got to link all these characters together. So, of course, Guinan knew Scotty and Kirk and them. Of course.
Guinan was an annoying character.
She was sort of a MacGuffin character,
she
too.
She was very much a MacGuffin character because anytime you needed any retcon, anytime you needed Guinan's any history, there was Guinan. If not her personally, then one of her relatives.
Or she was like, remember, sensitive. Remember yesterday's Enterprise when the timeline changed? She was the only one that recognized that something was wrong. So she was like, her character was like real, force sensitive, for lack of a better term.
Yes, I agree.
And that, yeah, she, and then she was always the one, Picard, I have a hard decision to make. I must talk to Guinan. So she was essentially commanding the ship because he always did whatever Guinan told him to do. She was essentially captain of that fucking vessel. Because he never disobeyed something she told him he should do as a person.
And it's a shame because Whoopi Goldberg, as an actress, pretty good in some roles.
I liked Burglar, god damn it. I'm the only person on the planet that did, but I liked Burglar.
Yes, you're the only person on the planet that liked that movie.
Shut up. And you know, they had, unfortunately Deep Space Nine fell into this trap as well. The holodeck was too much of a go-to for writers.
Yes.
We can go do anything we want and have all this fun and big adventures in Paris. And, you know, we can have Sherlock Holmes adventures and we can have gangster adventures. And I hate it. Every time it was a holodeck story, I just went, oh, God. It's like, I hate the holodeck. The holodeck was, you talk about my fucking MacGuffin. That was a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
I hated the holodeck.
Well, the only thing that annoys me about the holodeck is whoever engineered that, whoever was responsible for keeping it operational,
it's like 4,000 years in the future.
Should be, well, you should have been shot and cast out into space, because every single time your safety protocols would fail or it would malfunction or the exit wouldn't show up.
See, that's something that DS9 actually played with, that their holodeck worked. O'Brien even mentioned he didn't like the holodeck at first on DS9 because he was just waiting for something to happen.
Well, yeah, I'll give you that. It was a huge MacGuffin as well. It was fun and it was handy to have if you're doing some lazy writing.
I disagree with the fun, because unfortunately some of the fan favorite episodes of Next Gen are those holodeck ones, like where they're in the 1930s and that. To me, unwatchable. I watched those when they first aired and went, I will never sit through this crap again.
There is only one storyline in Next Gen that is unwatchable to me.
Which one?
It's the one where Berkeley becomes super intelligent.
Berkeley?
Berkeley.
Oh, yeah. Oh. To me, he'll always be Murdoch from the A-Team.
Yeah, I know. But he becomes super intelligent and links himself with the ship and
I remember that.
All that shit.
The fan favorite episode of Next Generation is what I consider one of the most boring hours I've ever spent watching television.
And what's that one?
The one where that probe zaps Picard and he lives an entire lifetime up to the point of being an old man.
And he comes back knowing how to play the flute. Yeah.
That is one of the most boring hours I've ever spent.
See, now I kind of enjoyed it because, again, we're getting a look
at... The Inner Light, that's the name.
Yeah. Again, we're getting a look at an everyday life in this timeline. Now, given by the time this probe had zapped him, it was thousands of years old.
But no, I'm not saying the story itself doesn't have possibilities, but it was boring. It was like watching Star Trek the motion picture, kind of boring. They were clearly going for an artistic viewpoint on this, and it's dull. It's not interesting at all to me.
Oh, okay.
So I've never understood why that is such a fan favorite. It's just, it's a boring, boring script.
And again, I enjoyed it because it was something that I didn't see often enough, in my opinion.
Well, all right, let's go back to the movies.
Okay.
So First Contact, you didn't really like?
It was okay.
See, like I said, I really liked the scary Borg. That new H.R. Giger redesign made the Borg really look different again.
Yeah.
And if you pay attention, you can see all different kinds of Borgs. You can see there's a Cardassian Borg and there is a Klingon Borg as well, which means that they're not just running into the Federation by that
point. Which makes sense, right.
But I think that was a nice little touch that they threw in.
Okay.
And it's scary with those two little things that they inject in your neck and you just become a Borg.
Mm-hmm.
That's creepy how they just grab you and boop, you're a Borg now.
It's zombie-like is what it is.
Yeah. And I thought that it was a creepy, creepy movie, and I really liked that. And then, of course, the appearance of the doctor from Voyager was a nice little in-joke.
Yes.
The emergency medical hologram.
Yes.
Starfleet research indicates that Borg implants are very irritating to the skin, and they're pushing him up against the wall. You know, I thought that was really cute. But I liked First Contact a lot. And then came Insurrection.
Yeah,
listeners, our silence should have just told you what we think of Insurrection.
Yeah, I never got into any of the Next Generation movies. As I never had as much invested
did
as
you
I
see
did
Nemesis?
In the originals. I mean,
Nemesis was horrid. Nemesis made Insurrection look good, and Nemesis pulled the ultimate "fuck you" to the audience.
Okay, how's that?
Okay, first again, the villain has to be linked to the main characters. He's a clone of Picard. He's a Romulan clone of Picard.
Okay.
So of course, God forbid, you know, they actually have a new character that's all new.
Right, right.
But they actually have the balls to kill Data. And I went, oh, cool. Very awesome. Oh, except Data made himself a clone. So they literally can restart Data. It's someone who gets to relearn all the emotions and everything that Data spent all the time on Next Generation learning. And you just went, really? You take the opportunity to finally show some balls and you kill Data, because Brent Spiner's clearly getting too old to play a character that doesn't age.
Right.
And then you reboot him?
Yeah.
I walked out of that theater with my fist clenched going, you fucking sons of bitches! This is the kind of shit why no one remembers the Next Generation movies as fondly as they do the classic Trek movies. God damn it.
Well, that and to me, the Next Generation characters really didn't have a place in any of the movies. Like I said, in Next Generation is very talky. There's a lot of negotiation. Politics plays a part. Makes for a good short TV episode. Hour, 2 hours if you do a continuation type thing. I can deal with that. But a full movie with all of the talking and the politics playing a role and stuff like that, it didn't quite work.
And the movies fell into the same trap that some of the classic Trek movies fell into. It was all Picard and Data.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Generations. First Contact actually didn't as much because that was written by somebody who didn't work in Star Trek. But you look at Insurrection, Nemesis, and Generations. It's Picard and Data
get
all the screen time. The rest of the characters, Riker, Worf, everybody, they're there just to be there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Gates McFadden actually had an interview once where she said if it wasn't in her contract, she wouldn't even have showed up because she had nothing to do in that movie except, you know, Captain, they're firing on us.
Yeah,
you know, she had nothing to do in that film. Why was she even in the movie?
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100% with
and
that.
And then, again, I'm sorry to bring up Deep Space Nine again, but because Worf permanently moved over to the Deep Space Nine series, they had to keep coming up with more and more convoluted reasons for Worf to appear in the Next Generation movies. I mean, it made sense in First Contact because the Borg were attacking Earth.
Right.
The Defiant on Deep Space Nine was a ship that was specifically designed to fight the Borg.
Yeah.
So it made sense that Worf was on the Defiant fighting the Borg at Earth.
Right.
And then they picked him up when the Defiant got damaged. That made total sense. I never questioned that Worf would be there.
Nope.
Yet, then in Insurrection and Nemesis, it's like, really? It's this ultra contrived reason of why Worf is here? That's dumb.
Yeah.
So it became even more difficult for them to keep their own characters in their own movie. And I'm sorry, but the big thing of Insurrection being Riker and Troy's wedding, who cares at that point? Did anyone really give a shit to see these two characters married at that point?
No, because their romance had played out so long. I mean, from episode one of...
Well, actually before that, because they had a history prior to the pilot.
I realize that. But what I'm saying is, to the audience, from episode one, we've watched this up and down romance. And really, by the time it rolled around to their wedding,
Care. Something else that, to me, makes Deep Space Nine a better show than Next Generation is Next Generation always kind of wanted to distance itself from Classic Trek, other than stylistically.
Yeah.
Because they didn't, other than, you know, leaving out Klingons, Romulans, things like that.
Right.
They never brought back any of, like, the one-note aliens.
Right.
Or the weird stories. Deep Space Nine embraced those. They brought back all three original Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
They brought back the Mirror Universe. They were going to bring back Harry Mudd, but the actor died. They had his episode scripted for DS9, but the actor died beforehand, and they didn't want to have a different actor playing the character. Otherwise, Harry Fenton Mudd was going to appear again. And it seemed like Next Generation was almost ashamed to be a sequel series. You know, that once Berman and Braga took over, they said, we want to make this our thing. We don't want to be part of the Star Trek whole. Does that make any sense?
No, that makes perfect sense.
And I always was kind of angry at the fact that they were almost ashamed of being part of Star Trek.
Yeah, well, they wanted to distance themselves because they wanted to see if they could stand on their own two feet, especially with Next Generation, because they, instead of rebooting the series or whatever or anything like that before any of that was popular, they said, can we make a series that can stand on its own? Let's really distance ourselves from the originals, and yeah, we'll pick up some of the fans that are still around, but we'll pick up even more younger fans if we don't fall into the traps that
they eventually did fall into.
That they eventually fell into anyway.
And so that's one of my problems. I mean, like I said, and what I find funny is people that are under 20, I see these reviews all over the internet where they look at like the first season and they just tear apart how bad it was. And I always go, the problem is you people didn't see that when you didn't see the arguably better episodes later.
Right, right.
When those aired, you do not know how big of an event that night, that September, late September night in 1987 was, when that 2-hour pilot of, like I said, we called it the new Star Trek, when that aired. You know, and you being out of the country, you missed it as well.
Well, I wasn't out of the country in 87, but I just wasn't paying attention.
Okay. Well, that was such a big deal. You know?
Actually, I was out of the country in part of 87. Anyway.
But that was such a big deal, and this was something so new that it was special. And yes, maybe the later seasons overshadow this, but you get people just tearing apart, oh, that's so terrible, and that's so stupid, blah, blah, blah. And you go, part of the problem is you had to be there.
Yeah.
You had to be there in September. You know, the show being syndicated, I can't give an air date because whatever market you were in would have aired it the same week. But
right. But
so late, it was like September 20-something, 1987.
It's kind of like looking back at Lassie and Leave It to Beaver and those cheesy, 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 trite sitcoms of the 50s.
Yeah, if you grew up with those.
If you grew up with those, if you were there, you had a totally different view of them than someone, you know, now we look back and we might laugh at them ironically. At the time, they were something to aspire to.
Well, and the launch of Next Gen was a big, big deal. Every science fiction magazine, every comic book magazine out there was counting down. Starlog, for an entire year before Next Generation came on the air, had a countdown of how many months and days from print date. until its premiere. This was a big, big deal to be bringing back Star Trek. Because I think only, the first four movies had been out at that point. So you had the first four movies, which more or less tied up all the classic Trek plot lines. Because 5 is pretty much a standalone movie.
Mm-hmm. Piece of shit.
Yeah, right. But so you had this, and it was a special time. I don't want to hammer that too much, but it really was. And you do understand what I'm saying. I know you do. But to the audience, do you understand what I'm saying of... You really had to be there. I mean, I know you as Scott, you get it.
Yeah, I know. I'm pretty sure that most of our audience does.
Not if they're under 30.
I'm pretty sure that most of our audience does.
Okay. But to me, Next Generation just, it's not as good. It's not Voyager or Enterprise bad. But out of the three quote-unquote good series, I actually consider it the weakest. See, to me, I'm a Trekkie. But I'm a classic and Deep Space Nine Trekkie. Next Generation was something I tolerated and I dealt with, but I didn't really enjoy it for what it was. Keep in mind, when this aired in 87, I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at it as an adult, even with knowing how special it was, the show just isn't that good.
See, and I'm just the opposite. I am not a Trekkie. By any stretch of the word. But to me, Star Trek The Next Generation, it holds on to that hope, and it holds on to something that I think we lose in DS9. I think I definitely see we lose in Voyager, and I think never even existed in Enterprise.
But see, that was one of the big failings of Voyager. They were trying to be Next Generation again with that fun adventure, as well as putting the exploration of classic Trek back in. That's what Voyager was trying to do.
And they
were trying to be the fun adventure
and
series.
They failed miserably.
Oh, they failed hardcore.
They didn't have fun adventures. You had too many dark, horrible, terrible, scary storylines going on.
No, you just had bad storylines. They were, because Voyager was the first Star Trek series that ever accepted fan scripts. No other Trek series would take unsolicited scripts. Voyager did, and you can tell.
Yeah, you can.
Because, I mean, even the worst Next Generation scripts were still written by professional writers. And that is both an insult and a compliment to professional writers.
Right, and excuse me for coughing this whole time I'm dealing
both
with.
Both of us are sick right now.
Yeah.
Because I've been coughing all day, too. So next week we'll deal with Deep Space Nine, and then we'll deal with the bad ones after that. And Scott and I are probably going to get into a fight over Deep Space Nine. Because
no, we won't.
I love it. Like I said before, I think it's one of the best science fiction series out there,
and
especially the last
meh.
Four seasons.
And I think it's just meh.
Yeah, see, I love it. To me, Captain Sisko, best of all the captains. Dr. Bashir is right behind Dr. McCoy as my favorite all-time Star Trek character, and Elam Garrick is probably the most complex and unpredictable character in all of Star Trek canon.
Okay.
So to me, that Deep Space Nine, amazing. Next Generation, meh. But we want to remind you, adamandeve.com.
Promo code static.
Promo code static. And email us at lostinthestaticshow@gmail.com. You can also check out archived episodes at jackaloperadio.com or my website, 1201beyond.blogspot.com. There'll be the archived episodes there, as well as my other shows, Radiodrome and all that. And you can listen to Scott. He does a pagan-centric one.
Yep, another pagan podcast. The last couple episodes haven't been very pagan-centric because one was a music special and the other one is a decompression because my wife went to Dragon Con. So she kind of came back telling us all about her adventures at Dragon Con.
And where can people find this?
People can find it on iTunes. Just search for Another Pagan Podcast.
Okay. Just figured we'd get a little plug in there for
your thing. I appreciate
that.
I appreciate it.
So, all right. We will cut out a little bit early. We'll talk to you guys later.
Actually, one last thing.
Okay.
If they'll go and check out jasonoblivion.com.
Oh, yeah, your friend.
Check out the Oblivion Radio Network. I'm the official disembodied voice for it. So I'm enjoying that, even though right now I probably sound like bleh.
Bleh? Is that actually a sound? Bleh?
Bleh.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
But nonetheless, thanks a bunch for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next week when we talk about bleh.
Deep Space Nine. Good night.
Bleh.